What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Show Radio, episode 521, coming to you on Wednesday, November 15th. We're going to look forward to USC and UCLA locking horns at the Coliseum, 12:30 p.m. on ABC. Going to preview the game and so much more, including having a special guest. Jake Merrifield from the What's Brewing Show is going to join us in a few moments as well. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, Rand of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rand of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Tune in, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Spotify. Email address, randoftroy@fanside.com. And our phone number, 818-643-7227. Second What's Brewing Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, journalist with my co-host here in the Raina Troy Studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. I'm super pumped because it's a rivalry week, which means we've got a special guest coming along. He's over in the green room right now, just wrecking havoc over there, but he'll be in here in a minute to talk about UCLA.
Yeah, one of our favorite people in the world, Jake Merrifield from the What's Brewing Show. He would probably call it a powder blue room right now.
Do you want to call it the powder room? Like, I mean, not sure that completely works.
No. It's rivalry week, Michael.
Then again, if it's the powder room, it could be a refreshing room, which leads us to a review that we got on Apple Podcasts. That says 5 stars from E. Santos MSC, refreshing podcast. I'm not a Trojan fan, but Alicia's guest appearance and demeanor convinced me to listen and watch several episodes, podcasts, and on YouTube. Impressed and appreciative of great, all caps, real people, analysis and discussion, great podcast. And no, I don't agree with all the takes, just appreciative of the points of view and thoughtfulness.
Thank you so much, E. Santos. That's the best kind of reviews we get. I mean, it's wonderful when we get reviews from Trojan fans. It really is. That's our audience. That's who we're playing to. But it's really wonderful when fans who aren't USC fans come on and say that they appreciate that we are real, we're authentic, we're passionate, but we're analysis driven and reasonable. So that's really, really lovely. And thank you for the review.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. We appreciate it. Everyone's always welcome here. Well, mostly
everyone who wants to listen and engage in a
is totally welcome
in a respectful and
which
and
is most people
manner, which is most people more than welcome.
Yes.
There are people who are not interested in doing that and they are not welcome. So yeah,
that's just from a certain fan base, but we're not going to get into that now, because Alicia, there's a lot going on, but more than anything, I think this is the perfect type of sort of sleepy week with USC currently at 7-4 is the record, a little sleepy time, which means it's perfect time to get antiquated. What's the word?
To get acquainted.
Acquainted. Jeez.
Your transition was beautiful and then you messed it up.
Unbelievable. I'm like Marshawn Lloyd against Utah, just fumbling away here. Oh my God. Put me under. Put me down. send me to the glue factory. USC fans, have you heard of Sleeper Daily Fantasy? Sleeper hosts daily fantasy prop games that you can compete for a chance to win cash prizes. The game is simple. For each contest, you're given a pool of props for upcoming games across different sports. You can pick whether each prop will be over or under given the total. You can choose up to 8 different props for a chance at a bigger win. If you want a chance to join in on the action, we've got you covered. Sign up with our promo code FANSIDED2 today and receive a deposit match of up to $100. Using that code FANSIDED2 when signing up not only gives you this great reward, but helps directly support the podcast. So make sure you use that promo code FANSIDED2 when signing up. The offer, of course, only available to new customers who are 18 plus, 19 plus, in Nebraska, 21 plus in Massachusetts, but 18 plus in California. So please remember to always gamble responsibly. Always this is gaming.
Game responsibly.
Yes, responsibly. And please check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. Also, later on in the show, we're going to have a little QR code up on the screen. So check that out and see if you qualify as well. But hey, we got a bunch of to get to. So let's get to the news and then bring our friend Jake Merrifield in here to talk about USC and UCLA.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale. For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Alicia, we have to bring in our special guest live. Mr. Jake, welcome. Did we catch you in a bad moment?
Well, I thought you were going to do something else, so I was sending off a text, and then, you know, and then you surprised me. Hi, nice to see you all.
Hola, how are you doing?
I thought it was going to be breaking news. I didn't know you were going to be breaking news by saying, oh, here's our guest, breaking news.
The news is that you're with us, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's nice to see Jake Merrifield from the What's Bruin Show. Welcome to the show to talk about SC and UCLA. How are you?
I'm doing good. We've had to change this schedule for, you know, like up and down the last couple of days. So I'm just kind of running a little bit ragged. But other than that, I'm all good. And this is going to be like one of the least anticipated crosstown showdowns for me. And that only happened in the last like couple of days personally. But I'm still, you know, I can't help but get excited about the, you know, the Bruins and the Trojans and the beautiful look it has on the field going down to the mausoleum. I can't wait for the game. And by the way, Michael, you said that I don't go to the Coliseum. I will. I always go to the Rose Bowl because I've had season tickets for years.
Yeah.
The Coliseum, it's kind of a hit or miss thing for me, but I'm not ruling it out. I was thinking about going this year until I ended up not being able to, but yes.
But would you agree that there are a fair number of UCLA people that like,
oh yes,
don't want to go into the inner city,
into the maw. Yeah. No, I think that's very true. And by the way, I thought, Alicia, where's your hat? I thought we were wearing hats today.
Oh, I didn't get the hat memo.
Oh, okay.
I should have.
She's dropping the ball. Unbelievable. Dropping the ball. One of the things that UCLA is good at. Because I don't know if you've heard, but UCLA is 108th in nationally in turnovers.
Yes, we are not living up to expectations, just like the boys across town.
Yeah, both teams. But you said not anticipated. Where does this rank among like games that I think neither team are overly excited to be in?
I think it's
up there with not exactly the 2010 game, which was SC on a bowl ban and UCLA in a bad season, but like it's up there, right?
Well, you know, and don't let me speak for what the actual football team, the UCLA Bruins or the USC Trojans are feeling. They're probably really geeked up about this. And for all we know, this might be a circle the wagon moment for the Bruins. They might come out and have their best performance of the year. That's entirely possible. But as far as like the fans and the juice of the game that we're all talking about, that is just, you know, in the crapper right now. And it's just because of what we just said, you know, both teams are woefully short of where they thought they'd be, even what, 2 weeks ago. You know, it's really a shame in that regard, because we all were very, very excited. And, you know, my confidence level going into the game, as far as like the product I would think the Bruins would have on the field, was, you know, 1,000% higher than it is right now. And that's just, you know, like less than 2 weeks ago. You know, now I have no idea what to expect.
Yeah, it's wild that UCLA, the sort of tide has turned at UCLA rather quickly, because I mean, obviously there was the early loss to who was that to?
We lost first to Utah, the 7-0 game, and that was
that weird loss to Utah.
Yeah,
and then the loss to Oregon State, but like you weren't out of it yet until you ran into the desert schools, and it felt like the season was, I don't know, you can correct my assumption here, but it felt, looking at UCLA, like the season was not as good as hoped for, but that all of the quarterback issues and all of that kind of stuff explained a little bit what was going on, and that the record was still pretty decent considering at 6-2, especially with the chance to roll through that final month of the season and set up a potential, you know, potentially getting into the Pac-12 title game if the Pac-12 did what it always does, which it is currently doing, which is cannibalizing itself and ending up with two lost teams having a chance. Or were you guys less optimistic coming out of that first 8 games?
No, really what it is that, you know, we had been hoping, you know, the fan base, the, you know, the people that talk about the team really had been looking forward to a year in which they had the opportunity to kind of overachieve. Kind of you're bringing in a really talented young quarterback, but he hadn't been on the field at all yet. And this is going back to before the preseason started, you know, the non-con. But there were these opportunities throughout this year up until this last week against Sparky, where the Bruins could still get kind of ahead of the sticks, get it, you know, under par, sort of, so to speak, right? And the losses were all explainable in that they were all tough games on the road. You know, I think Utah, that was a game in which we all thought we're like, you know what? They absolutely probably should have won that game based on how it played. And there's just a couple of freak plays that didn't go their way. Dante Morris first start on the road. And then the Oregon State game was like, well, they didn't win that game, but they probably weren't going to win that game before the season started anyway. And so we were still like, okay, look, they're still at expectation level. They're not above it, but they haven't dropped below it. And then even as the Arizona game shaped up, that was a game that we fully expected to win before the season started. But as it was rolling and Arizona was getting better and better, you're like, well, that's still going to be a tough game on the road. And I don't know if the Trojans have had as bad a luck in Tucson as the Bruins have the last 20 years. But that certainly was a game where any Bruin fan that's followed the team at all would know that you can't assume anything in Tucson. And so when I went out there and saw them lose, and it was kind of a very frustrating game for sure, but it still was a game in which it wasn't completely unexpected. And he still had the opportunity, like I said, to finish strong. But the game against ASU, just absolutely inexcusable as far as like the excitement the fan base has. You're favored by 17. You can only score 7 points. Dillingham's out there doing everything he can to win a game. And it's all smoke and mirrors. They didn't actually produce that much, but he produced more than Kelly did. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, they're out there. They can't figure out a quarterback. They can't figure out to run the ball. And it just was such a disappointing, deflating loss. And it kind of turned into a referendum on the whole Chip Kelly era, because it landed us very ironically, very coincidentally, right back at 500. And that's really been the story with Chip as the Bruin coach.
Yeah. Chip Kelly in year 6, 33-33 is his record. The Bruins 6-4, 3-4 in conference coming into Saturday's game. I want to run through a little preview segment here and start with the defense. This is all about Danton Lynn, the new defensive coordinator for the Bruins, the son of former Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn, a Penn State grad, sort of shot up through the coaching ranks in the NFL, most recently a DB's coach with the Baltimore Ravens. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is he runs sort of like a modified 4-3 that presents as like a 2-5-3, a pair of upright edge rushers there in sort of like a semi 4-3 that way, including the nation's leading tackles for loss leader, a shoe-in to be an All-American, I think, Leiatu Latu, at the outside linebacker spot, along with the Murphy twins. The Bruins are insanely good on defense, number 2 in the country in rush defense, allowing just 70 rushing yards per game, 2.32 yards per carry. Only James Madison is better. 4th in tackles for loss, 5th in sacks, 7th in yards per play against, 9th in scoring defense, allowing only 16.4 points per game, down from 29 a year ago, nearly cut that in half. And the big change was a coordinator hire. So I think if you're a USC fan, you can look at that and say, like, you know, this could, you could boost your defense by 13 points with the right hire. But the Bruins are also 10th in total defense, only allowing 289 yards per game. And I think the craziest stat I have found maybe ever, UCLA has held 6 of their first 10 opponents to under 4 yards per play, so 3.99 and below. For comparison, again, UCLA 6 of the first 10 opponents, they've done that. For comparison, USC has not done that in any of the last 39 games.
Yowza.
And only once in the last 59. The only time they did it was 2020, when they held Washington State to 3.98, just barely squeaked in there. But talk to me about this defense. Leiatu Latu looks incredible. The Murphy twins are great. What's up with this defense?
Well, you know, and you kind of tried to spell out like how they're deploying them, and they really are they really are willing to do whatever they want, depending on what the situation is. They'll have a couple guys down. They'll have, you know, they'll put down four down linemen or three, and they will, send timely blitzes. But the key of this defense has been they don't really have to blitz unless they want to. And that is such a luxury, as you guys know. If you can just blitz when you want to, then you probably have a pretty good defense. And that's really what it's been because of how good the front seven's been, not only with Latu and the Murphy twins, which are, you know, applying most of the pressure. They also have a guy named Carl Jones, who has become like their, super stalker of quarterbacks. They will put him like in a spy position. It kind of first time it really popped out was against Washington State and Cam Ward. But he's just like he's just a really good athletic defender that kind of is a jack of all trades. He started as a defensive back, and now he's just a really good linebacker. And they're just a really sound, solid defense. And when they have had trouble this year, it's really been the Oregon State game is the only game in which you'd say, oh, wow, I think, there's a couple things that got mismatched there. And even that, I think you could really pawn off on how bad the offense was doing, in that it was just they had to hold on so long and they were playing a balanced offense, which is, what the Beavers are. And even then, it's not like they went bonkers. I mean, they scored like 35 points, but some of those were just they're put in bad positions. Yeah. And then this last game against ASU and the one against Arizona, like they broke late, but it's because, I'm sorry, your offense is going to score 7 and 10 points. Your defense is going to eventually, kind of give up a couple points and some yards too. So they're really, really good. I don't know how good they'll be against SC because obviously SC is going to be probably the best offense they've played all year because they didn't play Washington. They didn't play Oregon. And I can't think of anybody really, probably the best offense they've played has been Oregon State. Yeah. And Arizona. So it doesn't remain to be seen. But with that being said, I wouldn't be surprised if they hold SC to below whatever their averages are in whatever category because they have been a good defense and really aggressive and they hit hard and they play hard.
Yeah. Danton Lynn, how are you going to feel when he's in Cardinal and Gold next year?
that'd really be funny. I am trying to figure out, is UCLA right now at the end of the Helton era? Or is USC right now at the last year of the UCLA era, right? You're about to send off your all-star quarterback. You need to make a defensive coordinator hire. Your head coach has made an enemy of the media. I mean, this all sounds very, very similar to last year for UCLA. So, we're just spinning around here, both programs. Where's the end?
I could see it. Lisa, what do you think? Do you see comparisons from this SC team to last year's UCLA?
Yeah, I see the comparison for sure. I think the differentiator here is that Chip was in year five,
yeah,
and Lincoln Riley's in year two, and that affords a little bit more space. But I think that it's definitely hitting on some of the missteps or areas where you create less of a cushion for yourself if you have a good year the year before and then come through and have a year that disappoints. If you've alienated certain aspects of your fan base, of the media, of all of those things. So I think I see the comparison for sure, but
only works when if you make the right defensive coordinator hire next year and take that big step forward, right?
Yes.
And then the other side of it is
what I like about the Clay Helton reference there.
Yeah.
Is that if Chip Kelly were to miraculously escape the executioner's block coming out of this weekend, I could be a UCLA podcast where I could sit and have the same conversations that I had in 2019 on this podcast and understand why somebody like Chip Kelly would be retained despite disappointing me again. So it's very, there's very much a Clay Helton vibe to the UCLA of it all, where it's like, yeah, you definitely want to get rid of him because you want to get somebody better. But also if you get rid of him, you have to make the hire that proves that you get better. And I think that UCLA is in a really, really tricky position here in terms of making that hire, assuming that that Chip Kelly has to go. And the thing that USC did is they eventually finally went out and made that did the firing, and then went out and got, I think, swung for further fences than any of us would have ever dreamed. And I wonder what UCLA swinging for the fences looks like.
We already did.
But the difference, Chip Kelly was a swing. Chip Kelly was taking advantage of somebody who was unemployed and had had a track record of success in the past. What I'm talking about is UCLA as a program capable of going out there and hiring somebody who is in the here and now, except widely accepted as a home run sort of hire?
Well, like a Jonathan Smith?
If I have to look at like the holy grail of hires that UCLA reasonably could make, not to turn this into a who UCLA should hire sort of podcast, but like,
let's go.
If UCLA goes out and gets Jonathan Smith, then proven you've gone out and gotten the coach that everyone says is the big man on the market.
Yeah.
It's funny. Obviously, I think if they hire Jonathan Smith, I'd be over the moon. That'd be a great hire for me. I am a little dubious that they will be able to hire, the point you're making, Alicia, is they hired a sitting head coach in a really good position from another blue blood. That was a huge coup. At the same time, UCLA hiring Chip Kelly in that moment, and you could talk about relatively speaking, right? That was the best coaching hire we've made since, the 1950s. We accidentally hired Terry Donahue, and he turned out to be the best coach we've ever had, really, other than, in the last 50 years for us. But that was, the Chip Kelly hire was a good process, and it just didn't work out for us. And however the Lincoln Riley hire works out for you guys, like, you could almost say, it already kind of worked out the way flipped your program around in the first year, but now it's kind of, fluctuating. But as long as the Bruins go out and have the same sort of process, I think there's a dozen guys who could do a good job at UCLA. And I think Chip really, there were so many things I liked about the program that he built here, except for the fact that he could never quite get over the hump. And he's sitting here 6 years later and he's a 500, and every step forward, it really, really was Helton-like at the end of it. Whereas like, there were things he did positive to get us all excited. And then it's like, and then we just had this horrible loss or these horrible circumstances that set it back. Yeah.
The biggest argument for firing Chip Kelly right here, right now, is that Chip Kelly has been the kind of coach who's been just good enough to not get himself fired the last 3 years, but not good enough to get himself like extended into a lifetime contract because everyone wants to keep him. And having that, living in that kind of purgatory is pain.
Well, if the last 3 years, if he had only been here for 3 years and this is the last 3 years, he wouldn't be fired. We'd be like, all right, hey, let's go with Chip. Yeah. Let's go to Big Ten with Chip. But the problem is we had the 3 years prior to that, and those were the, two of the three of them were the worst seasons that we've had since the 20s, 100 years.
What would it have taken to eliminate those? Because I understand that those years happened. But also, he's been 8-4, 9-4, and this year could end up as another 8-4 season potentially if you win your last two games. Like, at what point do you? What would it take to eliminate those initial losing seasons?
Well, I think all
like
of us
winning a conference or something, because you go back SC people are probably tired of hearing this, but like, go back and look at John McKay's first couple seasons, they were losing records, right? Like Terry Donahue had a 5-6 in year four. Like,
I can tell you exactly what it would have taken because I know it. I've gone over it every single season. And that is in the COVID year, you get to 3-2. And then by the way, after losing to Carl Durrell in his opener with Colorado, that was almost inexcusable, right? So you get to 3-2 though, in that season, in the COVID season, and then you lose to SC and Stanford. SC was bad enough. The Stanford game was inexplicable to finish under 500. Then in the next year, you get this really nice big start. You beat LSU, and then you end the year by, they had like a couple of terrible losses. And then last year, they end up losing three out of their last four games, one to Pittsburgh's JV squad, and then one to Arizona inexplicably at the Rose Bowl. So the way that Kelly keeps his job is he doesn't lose these horribly inexplicable games at the end of the season. He gets us all, and then
that, I, I made that exact comparison to Michael is basically if Chip Kelly had been more of James Franklin, where if UCLA's problem was just that they simply categorically were just not as good as the best teams in the Pac-12. If it was just losing to USC, Washington, Oregon,
lose to the better teams,
and maybe Oregon State when you go to Corvallis, if those were the losses, and there were 3 to 4 losses every year because you were just losing to the teams that are straight up better than you every year, that's not fun, as Penn State fans will tell you, but it at least it's stable, at least you know that the hump you need to get over is beating the best teams. The problem I've seen with Chip Kelly has been he always loses that game to ASU, like we saw last week. Like, there's always one or two of those.
Yeah.
And you're just going to lose everybody when you have those things happen. That's sort of an interesting wrinkle when it comes to where, like, Lincoln Riley is at right now at USC. The one thing that he can say is that he's only losing to the ranked teams, and at USC that's not acceptable, but you can't be getting upset by 17 point underdogs.
Yeah, and the only other thing I would say talking about all this is the other part that you have to adjust Kelly for is that this is the first 2 seasons we've ever played an FCS school. You know, this is so you're already granting him a free win too, right? And he never got to 10 wins, even though he was completely set up for it. So he's playing against the easiest schedules pretty much that we've had in 50 years of UCLA football, and he's still getting the inexplicable loss. And that's really where it really kind of reached a boiling point.
Yeah, and then, you know, this is the year that you missed Oregon, you missed Washington. And I know that Oregon State's a really good team, so it's really you swapped out Washington for Washington State, right? Essentially. That should have been one extra win, and the other one was the FCS game, like you said. Should have been 2 wins that would have helped on everything else. So let's talk about the UCLA offense. I don't know what to make of this. So we have in our notes that UCLA's offense is sort of bad, but I don't think they're bad.
Sad.
I don't know what to make of them. So the Bruins are 108th nationally in turnovers, 18 turnovers in 10 games. It's 1.8 per game, according to my math. 118th in sacks allowed, allowing 3.3 per game. The Bruins are averaging 5.15 yards per play in conference play alone. They're lowest in the conference since 2010, when they averaged 4.67 back in the Pac-10. And the Bruins are dead last nationally, literally dead last, 133rd in America in red zone offense, scoring on just 63.6% of red zone trips. Basically the polar opposite of USC's offense, who's averaging 92.2 scoring rate in the red zone. Trojans also ranked number 1 in red zone touchdown rate at 82.4%. If SC missed their next, went 0 for their next 23, they would be equal to what UCLA is doing in the red zone. It's that bad. UCLA's kickers also a problem here. Only 7 of 14, 50% this season.
50%.
RJ Lopez lost the job after missing 5 of 8 in the middle of the season. Then Blake Glessner comes in, missed 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago at Arizona, missed 2 kicks. And we haven't even got to the quarterback issue. But like, before we talk about the quarterbacks, like, what is this offense?
The offense is not good. That is kind of been the case since we got into the conference season. They have been searching for a quarterback that could stay upright and could make some plays. And it's in stark contrast to the non-con. The non-con, I know they didn't play the best competition, but it's still like, you know, it wasn't like they were like last year against the non-con, the UCLA offense actually was kind of herky jerky and didn't really have it all together, even with Zach Charbonnet and DTR. This year, they were lights out, unbelievably good on offense after like 3 drives against Coastal Carolina. And so that it gave us every indication that they would continue to be at least manageable, you know, at least mediocre in the Pac-12 conference, but it just has not been. And it's not like they're playing a murderer's row of defenses either, right? But the real problem has been that Dante Moore just doesn't look like he was quite ready. Now, he might be now. I don't know. He might come out against SC and have learned learned the lessons he needs to learn and go out there and sling it. That's entirely possible, but I wouldn't say likely. But he just was not ready for to play teams like Utah and to play teams like Oregon State. And he really struggled against them. And then when Kelly decided to try to go to the steady hand, he puts in Ethan Garbers, and Garbers ran the offense fairly well in the first game he was back against Stanford. I was up at that game and he looked really good and real savvy, but the problem is he will not throw the ball deep at all. And so we have all these guys. One of the guys you're very familiar with, Kyle Ford, hasn't, like, he got hurt a little bit, but I mean, he's got like 6 passes the entire season. Now, that's underselling a little bit, but been almost relatively uninvolved. Jamichael Sturdivant, the guy we got from Cal, who's just a stud, who was very involved in the non-con, has been like a ghost for the last, you know, 6 games. And it's because Garbers wouldn't throw it to him. And then Garbers gets hurt. And then we have to, you know, Chip decided to go with Colin Schley against Arizona State. And I think that the Bruins would have won handily if they just would have committed to like a ground game, a triple option sort of type attack, just run the ball all the time type of attack. But Chip has shown an inflexibility to kind of get away from trying to set up everything with the pass this year. And I really don't understand it, because it seems like the strength of the team, even when you talk about the offensive line, which has had trouble with pass blocking, but they've been pretty decent with run blocking, and they have a couple battering rams back there. And it just feels like it just hasn't come together. So I feel like if they could play to their strengths, they could be a mediocre offense, which is, I think, is all you'd need to go along with this defense, but they have not lived up to that yet for a variety of reasons.
Yeah. Talk about the quarterbacks there. Dante Moore, the freshman, only completing 52% of his passes, 7 picks, 10 touchdowns, quarterback rating of .127.4. Yeah. Sort of began the season as the starter, kind of got derailed there. Utah game and the Oregon State game didn't go his way with pick sixes. Ethan Garbers, the Washington transfer, the numbers look good for him. 68.1% completion percentage, 6 touchdowns, 3 picks, passer rating of 153, but he, of course, gets hurt. Slee comes in to start the ASU game. His numbers look bad.
He cannot throw the ball. Like, he can throw it really far, but it comes out like a laser, and you have no idea where it's going to go.
Yeah. He's thrown for 139 yards, but he's ran for 298 yards and 3 TDs.
He's electric running the ball.
He's the Kent State transfer. He started against ASU. So I don't know what to make of the quarterback situation. The depth chart says or for all those guys. It has all season. Chip Kelly was asked about it after the ASU game and said that Moore and Garbers were, quote, available in emergency situations. This is according to On3. Quote, they're getting better. They didn't take really many snaps at all this week. They're both working through things. And the decision was made by our medical staff that the best decision was to not play those guys. But who knows what that means for Saturday? Moore, Garbers, Lee, like, if it's up to you, what is your game plan? Is it just to ride Carson Steele, the Ball State transfer at running back? Like what do you do?
If I don't know who's going to be available, I don't know how mobile Ethan Garbers is going to be, but I think if he's at all limited, I think you have to sit him, because one of the things that he was doing well was timely running, even though he's not like DTR, right? He's not going to hurdle anybody ever, but he's very savvy, right? And he could get out of the pocket or, you know, create some for himself. But if he's not mobile, then I think I'd be really bad for him. If Moore, who was concussed allegedly a couple weeks ago, if he's ready to go, I think they should just let it rip and see how it goes. And then also do something that I wish they would have done against Utah, and that is let Colin Schley in there and just don't try to get fancy. Just run the ball with him, run the option, and let him do his thing and do kind of like of a switch off sort of thing. I think that's what we've all kind of wanted, how we wanted it to turn out all year long, and it never has quite come to fruition. But obviously, looking at the USC defense, I think running the ball is going to be the way that you get good things happening, and everything off of that. And I would hope that the more you run the ball, this is a game where, you know, a lot of times Chip Kelly has no concern for time possession. This year, I don't know what he has any concern about, but in, you know, traditionally in his other years at UCLA, he is, you know, he's perfectly fine to put up 50 points and only have the ball for 20 minutes, you know, and that's happened numerous times up until this year. But I think this is a game, obviously you're playing, you know, Williams and that amazing offense. You know, really try to flip that time position around by possessing the ball, try to limit the opportunities to score, and, you know, take your chances against the USC defense because they're obviously the weak link of you know, that team. And then try not to put yourself in a position where you have to kick a field goal because that's a 50-50 proposition. So, yeah. You know, that's what it is.
I have one question. Does UCLA have a special teams coordinator?
You know what? They do have somebody that's named as it, but I don't think it's like his like, I know you guys complain about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
I have to look it up.
I don't complain about it, which is sort of the funny thing about, like,
oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know. My thing on special teams coordinators is whether you have one or what that's singular or somebody who's doing double duty, nobody likes their special teams. So I'm, yeah.
Well,
UCLA has had I feel like UCLA has been very, very good with kickers and yes. Specialists for special as long teams as I can remember. Yeah.
That's what the thing has been. It's like, you know, Kelly was asked, why is he not getting scholarship kickers anymore? And he's just like, oh, you know, we go look at a bunch of them, but they don't choose to come here. And it's like, I find that inexplicable. Yeah. But that seems to be his rote answer for everything. And our special teams are perfectly adequate in every respect, other than when they try to kick a field goal, half the time it goes into the ground. A quarter of the time, or I guess I should say 33% of the time it goes into the ground, and 17% of the time it goes wide, and then half the time it might go through. You know, it's just the kicking, the actual kick part, you know,
like, see, the coverage plus is decent, side,
everything else is fine.
The plus side is you're playing a USC defense that is really bad at forcing teams to have to kick field goals because
they just get
into the red zone and score. And I think that's what's the most intriguing part of this matchup. In fact, I would say the lackluster nature of this matchup that we all acknowledge, considering where both of these teams are and the expectations that have been fumbled this year, this to me is the most intriguing, just pure football matchup of the season, because UCLA's defense has been so good and USC's offense has been so good. But on the flip side, I've been overusing this phrasing all season, but it's like the movable force meeting the stoppable object, or whatever way in reverse, with this offense, with this UCLA offense and this USC defense. I would agree with you that running the ball is probably your best bet as a UCLA approach going into this, especially given the difficulties that the quarterbacks have had. But one thing that we did notice sort of against Oregon is that, and to be fair, Oregon didn't need to run the ball because they were passing to wide open receivers and scoring on missed tackle touchdowns every other play. So it didn't really matter, but USC's front seven did look better against the run against Oregon than they had looked for most of the season. The expectation being that they simplified some of what they were asking those guys to do, and that might have yielded slightly better results.
But the back end looked the worst they have. But part of that was because of injuries. SC had just about everybody out in the secondary.
How are you guys looking for this week as far as that goes?
Well, I mean, it's funny you bring that up because Jacoby Covington, the corner who has been out for several weeks now, tweeted something like, I'm just free or freed or something like that, which sounds to me like he's been cleared to play, which could be a plus for USC. But at the same time, like, USC's corners, USC safeties have all been collectively bad the entire way, in a way that suggests that it isn't the presence of one or the other, that it's just they're all just collectively bad. I haven't necessarily seen if Jalen Smith, the nickelback, is going to be back, but I would feel far more confident in this matchup if he and Covington are able to get on the field. But I think that the bigger issue is just that, coming from the USC perspective, I know that UCLA's offense has been very frustrating, but USC has a history of getting the best offensive performance out of their opponent of the season every single week. So if you had to pick a quarterback that you would want to see, like, which matchup here would you go with, knowing that whatever quarterback you put out there is probably going to have a season best? I have a guess who it would be. But
it absolutely would be Dante Moore. We play a drop in our show, more and more and more. How do you like it? How do you like it? and that's ideally what it would be, because, you know, if he has, you know, sat on the bench and kind of figured out anything at all and can kind of channel where he was at the beginning of the season. And by the way, you know, you guys said it yourself, the SC defense has been struggling all year long, and theoretically this is one of the easier matchups he's going to be facing, right? Well, when he was facing earlier matchups earlier in the season, he was letting it rip. And he was looking really, really good. And so there is a world in which it's just, we haven't seen it as Bruin fans in a month, you know, but there is a world in which he comes out there and they are able to take advantage of the things that USC's defense is trying to gift them. And the person who can take advantage of that most is certainly Dante Moore, because he will take advantage of all of the talent that the Bruins have accrued on the edges. Well, like I said, going back to Sturdivant, Ford, Logan Loya, we have a couple big tight ends, and you know, that will really get things cooking, I guess, in the way that Chip Kelly wants to cook. Personally, I would like that to be the gravy on top of the Bruins just smash mouthing their way to keeping Caleb Williams off the field. But in my mind, I can see it happening both ways. I don't know what I consider likely. I mean, to me, the most likely situation is that they come out as flat as they have the last couple of weeks, because they're kind of, it seems like everything's kind of in a little bit of turmoil. But, you know, even though I think that's likely, it's not the only possibility. And I could see them coming out and us having a really classic but very unmeaningful crosstown showdown, like it was, you know, the year before Riley was hired, you know, or mm-hmm. any number of years before that, you know.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fascinating matchup. Absolutely. We talked about it, we've joked about it, that it'd be great if SC could face Iowa just to see what the hell would happen. The USC's defense, who can't stop anyone against Iowa's offense, who can't score. UCLA's offense, probably the closest thing. Then again, we talked about that with Utah's offense, and yikes.
But here's the thing. They have a lot of talent that has made big plays this year. It's just, yeah, it's been dormant, right? So it's not like an Iowa thing. Like, they're just hopeless, you know?
Right.
They're not even trying. Yeah. They're not even trying. Like, UCLA's been trying, but it just hasn't been successful. So it's like, if they get it, you know, if they hit the right combination, then it could be off to the races. They could really put up some points. But I don't see why we could reasonably think that at this point, given the way the last month has gone.
Well, yeah. What's surprising to me is just that I always expected Chip Kelly offense to have a very stout run game that they can sort of lean on. And it's weird, right, to me that that's not something that has just been part of the plan. But then again, maybe the quarterback issue means, I mean, is the quarterback issue causing defenses to just key in on the run and force the quarterback to beat them?
He's got two guys that are averaging over 5 yards a carry. It's just, they're not getting enough carries. You know, last week against ASU, Carson Steele and TJ Harden got 22 total carries in the game, and it should have been, you know, should have been 40, you know, and that's a shame, you know, and this it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Before we let you go, Jake, give us your prediction, any final thoughts, any of those things, because I don't know. I don't think we know exactly what to make of Saturday's game, and I don't know if
you do either. I have no idea. I'm going to hope for a strong defensive effort from the Bruins. I'm going to hope for, us to, you know, kind of like what I had said, Moore and Schley to come out there and get things cooking. But mostly I want to see Crocky J, that's Carson Steele, the Man of Steel, and TJ Harden doing some damage out there. I know this is probably foreign language to all you Trojan fans, but, you know, these are the nicknames for all of the guys on the Bruins this year. And I'm going to say they're going to come out there and win a second consecutive game at the Mausoleum, and they're going to win it. What's a weird score, Alicia? I know you like weird scores. Let's go 29-26. Is 29-26 a weird score, Michael?
Yes,
that's super weird.
That's a beautifully weird score.
29-26. And
that's a lot of field goals, huh?
I'm trying to think of how we would get that.
Missed extra points, Michael.
No, I'm put in a safety. We're going to get to 27. We're going to miss an extra point. You know, and we'll get a safety.
Miss an extra point and get a safety.
And get a safety. Yeah.
I think that's how it's going to be. And then, by the way, like, are you going to go for two every time? Like, how does that work now? I know that's kind of controversial.
Sweet Jesus.
Oh, boy.
I do want to say a few more things. And it's one, I'm hoping the Bruins get a victory. And then, you know, can someone get Caleb a tissue, please? And then number two, thanks, Dan, for demanding my presence earlier in the show. And I love being on Reign of Troy, and hopefully it won't take another year for me to get back.
Yeah.
Michael.
We love having you, on Troy.
You were on a month ago.
Over the summer, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's true. I don't remember. I don't.
You were on a month ago and on our on Run After Dark. So
he wants a regular appearance, Michael.
Oh, yeah. I was on the partition appearance. Thanks a lot, Michael.
The partition. No, those are our best shows. They're for the members only.
And by the way, why was I on? Why was I invited on?
Because at least
your lovely wife couldn't be on. I was a fill-in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You were our Colin Schley.
I was your Colin Schley. Thank you so much. Yeah. Guys, right, I love talking to you. And thanks, everybody, for watching. And hey, what's up, Kenny Martin? Love you, too.
All right.
Go check out Jake on the What's Bruin Symposium.
Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly. All right, we will catch you guys. Catch you later, Jake.
Go long.
See ya.
Go Bruins.
All right, there's our good buddy Jake Merrifield from the What's Bruin Show. We are going to get into over under because Alicia, we things are tightening up. You're getting close. We got the battle between G Pats and Vince and. In San Diego, like heating up, things are getting good. Things are getting good. So let's get to over under. But before we do, we want to give a big thank you to Alex for the super chat. Hey. Alex coming through, always the best.
Good old Alex.
Cheers and a good scoop of Brita. Gotta love those. All right, let's get to over under, shall we?
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right. Let's get to over under. Of course, for the season, I lead 36-30 is my record. Yours is 32-34. What's your first over under of the week, USC and UCLA?
I am going with 238.5 UCLA rushing yards, going along with... what we were just talking about there with Jake. So UCLA is averaging 238.5 rushing yards in their victories this season. They're averaging 207 yards. USC is averaging 207 yards allowed on the ground in their losses. Five USC opponents have had 200 plus yards rushing this year, including the season high given up against Washington inexplicably. But UCLA's rushing high is 287, and we just heard from Jake that they might choose not to run a little bit too often. So where are you feeling this?
Okay, what is the thing that we've talked about this year so far? We said Utah couldn't do anything, and then they did it. This team couldn't do anything, and then they did it. They had Washington couldn't run the ball, and then they did it, which means... this is going to be an under because UCLA is going to pass all over SC. They're not going to run all over SC because you don't expect that because their passing game hasn't been their strong suit.
Well,
weird things happen against the USC defense. Give me the under because UCLA will pass.
USC's DBs can't cover a tackle. So, yeah.
Yeah. So there we go.
So you're saying it's going to be an Oregon situation where they're just not going to have big rushing totals because who needs to run when every time you pass the ball, you get 50 yards.
It could be one of those situations. Why not? I could see it. Let's get to my first over under, which is over under 2.25. Leatu Latu tackles for loss. He is the national leader in tackles for loss with 18.5 in the last three games against Colorado, Arizona and Arizona State. He has 8.5 in those games. So I'm putting the line at 2.25. Can he get to 2.5? It's basically the question. Over under.
Smashing that over.
Okay.
Yep. Smashing it. I don't trust USC's offensive line to deal with somebody like Leatu Latu in this game. I think he could end up with a couple sacks and a tackle for loss and get this pretty routinely. But we'll see.
All right. Let's go to your next over-under. What do you got?
I have 299.5 Caleb Williams passing yards. UCLA, and this goes around with their defense has been so good this year. UCLA has only allowed one team to get 300 plus yards passing this year, and it was Arizona with exactly 300 passing yards. So no one playing this UCLA defense has had 301 passing yards. Granted, that might be explained by the quarterbacks they've faced. The best quarterbacks they've played were DJ Uiagalelei and Shedeur Sanders, both quality, you know, guys who can produce in terms of passing numbers, but certainly not Bo Nix or Michael Penix or anything like that. So I suppose Noah Fifita should be in there as one of the best playmakers at quarterback that they faced this year, and he still only had 300. On the other hand, Caleb Williams is on a 3-game run of 300 plus passing yards,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to be tough when the UCLA defense is going to make it tough on him. So I set it at 300. I should have set it higher, but I didn't know where to go higher. So
yeah, no, it's tough there. I'm going to take it over, but not by much. I think this is going to be slightly over. I expect something very similar to sort of the Oregon game where it's like 310, just barely over by a hair. He's not going to be thrown for 400 yards per se.
Yeah.
So just a little bit over, which will lock you into the under. Let's go to my second over under, which is over under 2.5 USC sacks. Let's talk about the Bruins' lack of sack protection. The Bruins are 118th in sacks allowed in the country, allowing 3.3 per game. In conference play alone, they are allowing 4.14 per game. Only Colorado, who gives up 4.7, is allowing more in Pac-12 play. Each of the last 7 UCLA opponents, all conference opponents, have registered at least 3 sacks. Utah had 7. Oregon State had 5. SC, on the other hand, defensively, has recorded 2 sacks in the last 5 games combined.
Oh, Lordy. That's bad.
And that's despite the Trojans ranking 5th nationally in sacks after the first month of the season. So all the sacks in USC's defense have just completely dried up. There is none of those happening at the moment. But UCLA allows a billion of them. So can SC become the 8th Pac-12 opponent to sack a Bruin quarterback 3 times? 2.5 is the line.
I'm a hopeful over on this just because USC has really struggled to get after the opposing quarterback recently. But UCLA has a far more unsettled offensive line than most of the teams that USC has played recently. Like the Cal game is a big outlier. That's a big red flag for what happened there in terms of not being able to get after the quarterback. But when they played an offensive line that was sort of wibbly wobbly like ASU's,
wibbly wobbly, I like that.
Yeah, they got 8 sacks in that game, and
7 in the fourth quarter alone.
I mean, yes. Yeah. So, oof. I'm just going hopeful here. I think that USC will have a couple guys break through to have a moment in ways that they haven't before. If it's Dante Moore, getting him down might be kind of difficult, but he's also been, you know, I think sometimes even a mobile quarterback, part of their issue is just holding on to the ball a little bit too long and creating opportunities where they get sacked when
Caleb gets sacks a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's very elusive, but yes, he also still gets sacked. So I think that's tough there. I think it's a good
USC should be able to get 3 sacks in this game. And the fact that I'm sitting here uncertain, looking at this matchup, uncertain that USC can get it is a big sign of where this defense is at.
100%. Yes, I agree. Let's go to your last line. What do you got?
I am going 1.5 catches for Kyle Ford. USC has played three players this year. This will be the third former Trojan receiver that USC has gone up against. Garrett Bryant Jr. had two catches for 23 yards against the Trojans. Munir McLean with Utah had nothing, no production. Kyle Ford is an intriguing one because, as Jake pointed out, he's a guy that we all know can be productive, hasn't been particularly productive with UCLA this year, but he's missed the last two games. Well, he missed the Arizona game with an apparent injury, suited up for the Arizona State game, but didn't have any production in that game. He is expected to play against USC. Will he come out with two or more catches is sort of where I'm at, because the players that USC, the former Trojans that USC has faced this year, have not really done all that much against the Trojans.
No, I think the one that has done the most is JJ3, right? JJ3 had that big fourth quarter for Nevada, but
that's the one I forgot to add in here. Yeah, let me go pull up what he did.
Yeah, I think he had three catches because the line was at 3.5, if I remember right, or was it 4.5? Either way, I thought
he was under on that.
He did hit the under, but he got right up to the brink of it. You've set the line.
He had three catches for 52 yards.
Yeah, you set the line at pretty low here, mm-hmm. But then again, you look at Kyle Ford's numbers. He's only had more than that in, you know, six of the 10 games. He only has 13 catches all season. He had three against Stanford, three against Colorado. But I don't know. I'm going to take the over just because I think that if not that this completely matters. Chip Kelly has more important things to do, like fight for his job here. But like, it makes sense to want to get Kyle Ford going, get him a couple catches at the Coliseum back as a little, you know, hit job back at the school that he left. Right. Like it makes sense. Right. Give me the over. I don't think two catches is a lot to ask.
If I had set the line at 3.5, because I was thinking about
3.5, I would have set under.
Okay. Because I was thinking of doing like, will he have a season high against USC? And I just didn't. I didn't like it. I wasn't comfortable with it. I think I suspect that when it comes to Kyle Ford, there's a very good chance it will be 1 or 5.
Sure.
So yeah, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. I'll end up taking the over there. So it locks you into the under on 1.5 Kyle Ford catches. All right. Last one for me is over under 27.5 UCLA points. On average, UCLA's Pac-12 opponents have held the Bruins to about 7 points under their season averages for their scoring defenses. This is sort of ballooned by Arizona and ASU's defense getting more out of their production, like holding UCLA to way under their personal averages. Arizona held UCLA to 11 points under what Arizona's scoring defense is, and ASU held UCLA to 20 points under what ASU scoring defense is. Those have been two big examples, but Utah held UCLA to 7 fewer than they've allowed this season. Washington State, 5 points fewer. Colorado, 5 points fewer. Every opponent except for Oregon State and Stanford gave up fewer points to UCLA than they have to everyone else in terms of an average. USC is allowing 34.6 points per game. So I just lopped off the 7 points there and put this 27.5. If SC holds UCLA to 7 points fewer than their average, it's 27.5 points. So there we go. UCLA is averaging 20.4 points in conference play, but 40.3 in the non-con, which, like Jake said, was against easier competition defensively. So could this be the week that UCLA channels their good vibes and scores a lot of points? 27.5 is the line.
I am going over on this. I do not trust USC's defense. As we talked about with Jake, the thing about like comparing UCLA's offense to something like Iowa's offense is that they've been sort of inexplicably bad, where Iowa just feels like they don't have talent, they don't have scheme, they don't have coaching, they don't have whatever. But UCLA has a run game that should be better. They have quarterbacks who have good moments, who can throw the ball, who can make plays. They have talent there that they have underperformed their talent level.
Yeah.
And USC's defense has a way of letting opposing talent shine. So I am taking the over on this fairly confidently. If USC's defense, with another week of new voices at the head of the defense, in terms of defensive coordinators, maybe they show a little bit more, continue to show a little bit more, but I'm still not there.
Okay. All right. I locked me into the under, and I don't hate that, to be honest.
Well, realistically, this could be a weird, like 21 to 20.
It could be. If you told me that this game was in the 40s or in the 20s, I'd say, yes, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
It could be either or. Absolutely. Let's get into the Vegas spread. The Trojans are 6.5-point favorites. Bill Connolly's numbers has the S&P projection at UCLA 2 points behind the Trojans. The Trojans winning 32-30. Lisa, what is your prediction?
I like that SP plus projection. Honestly, I'd picked a score before even looking at it. I'm going 33-30 USC. Okay. And that's by the strength of Caleb Williams alone. I'm not even confident about that 33 for USC.
Okay. So does UCLA miss a bunch of extra points there, yeah, or they're making field goals?
Missing extra points.
Okay. I am going to go with USC 27, UCLA 21. I think SC struggles to score points. I think it might end up looking a lot like last week's game for the Trojans on offense, where it's a little sputtery. They're able to score, but it's hard to get into the end zone. We saw that against Utah as well. So 27-21. I'm putting UCLA right at 21 because I do not trust them to make a field goal outside of a PAT. So 27-21. We did get a comment in the chat from Jeff that says, I feel like Michael rigs the over-under. At least he gets stuck with some bad ones. Well, am I rigging it?
I mean, you can't possibly rig it because we both make our own. We both go through the stats and pick our own. So
yeah.
I think Michael does a better job of setting his lines personally. That's just me.
Yeah. I don't know that there's a science in it.
There really isn't.
There are years where you are way better than me and years that I'm better than you, like this year. So yeah. I don't know. We will see. All right. Let's get to the mailbag, shall we?
You've got mail.
All right, let's start with an email we got from Andrew. One of the things Lincoln Riley is probably doing that no one talks about is compiling a short list of potential quarterback transfers just in case Malachi Nelson isn't ready. Who do you think he's looking at? That's from Andrew in Lisbon.
I mean, there's the talk of what, Jalen Daniels at Kansas. Michael Pratt from Tulane that's been rumored to be in the portal discussion, although he's said that's not true. Can you think of anyone? Cam Ward?
I think Cam Ward is the dream. The dream guy that I've thought for a while is Shedeur Sanders, but that's not happening. No. So I think Cam Ward is the guy. And Cam Ward makes sense. 1 year of eligibility left. Washington State is getting relegated. And I believe he has the free transfer because he's transferred before, but his transfer before was from FCS to FBS, which he would not have to sit out anyways, regardless of rule change. So I think he still has the free transfer.
Still not happening.
You don't think so?
No.
I think that's
as Kenny says in the chat, Cam Rising. Yeah, that's to
Cam,
me.
Cam that's Rising the, would that's be the one, incredible.
But that's also not happening.
Yeah. Cam Rising would be incredible too. My problem with Jalen Daniels is the dude's never been healthy for that long.
Yeah, I don't like putting my faith in that.
If you're going to go out and get a transfer quarterback because you're unsure of what you have to go out and get a, not necessarily a sure thing, but someone that you're very confident in.
Yeah.
And Jalen Daniels might be the perfect guy, but I want a clean bill of health a little bit more. I almost trust Cam Rising more in the sense of, no, he's coming off the injury, but you've seen it from Cam Rising for a full season. Yeah. So, all right. Let's run through the questions we've got here on YouTube. Touchdown USC says, is Chip Kelly really getting pushed over the wall?
Sure seems like it. That's all the scuttlebutt is in that direction. It's hard to sort of argue otherwise.
Yeah, it seems like there's too much smoke for it not to be the case, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Short of like a 50-0 performance against USC,
Which I can't imagine possibly happening. Yeah. Kenny says that the Solid Verbal this week previewed SC and UCLA that said that they're both proof that you can't use the portal to, quote, skip the line ahead of good recruiting, especially along the lines. Would you agree?
I mean, yeah, on the lines for sure. I think that's true, but I don't know that anyone was saying otherwise. I think USC and UCLA used the portal to skip the line in terms of a turnaround to allow you to not have to do a full rebuild. And that's not nothing. Being able to be winning games while you're in the process of rebuilding your offensive and defensive line is kind of a huge deal because you just raise the platform of your program considerably. So, I mean, yeah, you can't skip the line when it comes to developing your lines, but skipping the line, like you can't skip to the front of the line maybe in terms of competing with Georgia, but you can certainly skip into a top 25 position, which is much better than the alternative.
Yeah. I look at Oregon too. Look, Oregon's completely
Oregon's
built.
Defense, yeah.
Is built on transfers, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I think you can, it's just very difficult.
Yeah.
Last question before we wrap this thing up, Ron Murdy says, since we know that we will beat the Bruins, that's some confidence there. What bowl game should we hope for? Alamo, Holiday, Vegas, or the LA Bowl?
I think, well, I don't know. The tie-ins are weird now. I think Alamo is the best tie-in.
Alamo's the best bowl, but then you run the risk of the Oklahoma thing.
I absolutely, whatever gets USC to not have to have that matchup is the one I want, personally.
Holiday is something that nobody looks forward to, but Vegas would be cool.
Vegas
I
would
guess.
Be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an SEC team, I think. So, yeah. All right. That'll work. All right. We will be back with the After Dark episode for members only on Thursday, tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Pacific time. And of course, we'll be back with the CarCast, probably about 7 o'clock on the CarCast on Saturday night. So come check us out then. Until then, make sure to play your over-under, make your over-under picks. The link's in the chat. If you're joining us live on YouTube, the link's in the description. If you're listening to us, wherever you're listening to us. So until then, we will see ya. See ya.
See ya. Ooh, Alex sent a new super chat, though.
Oh.
Cheers.
Cheers. True or false, a good DC must relate to the players and must be liked by the players, Alex says. I think it has to be
I don't think that's the most important thing. A good DC needs to schematically understand how to deploy his players the best. Position coaches need to relate to players and not be liked by players, but relate to them at least in terms of being able to recruit and retain talent. I don't know that a DC.
It's a nice to have.
It's a nice to have in for the DC, yes.
Yes. One of the things that people like about Danton Lynn is he's young. He's our age.
Yeah.
So,
More importantly, Danton Lynn calls a good defense and puts his players in position to succeed.
Yes. You could be an old fart and call the defense. And
you can be a young guy who relates to your players and have them in the wrong position every time.
Right. Yeah. Success is what ultimately is the most important thing. And I know that that's lame, but it's the thing. So, all right. Until next time, we'll see you.
See ya.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale. For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.